Ignition sequence start. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0. Liftoff. We have a liftoff.
Hello, everyone. Thank you so much for joining us. This is the Two Space Collectors Collecting Space podcast. I know it's a mouthful. This is Jason Rubin speaking, and my best buddy and space collecting friend of 20 plus years, Richard Jurek. Say hi, Rich.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the podcast.
Well, everyone out there, we hope that you enjoy this. This is our inaugural episode one. We've got plenty to say, chock full of fun content. We're so thankful that you've joined us on this ride. It's going to be all about you. This is not about Rich or myself. This is all about the listener, all about the collectors out there. So we hope that you enjoy. Rich, why don't you go ahead and tell them who you are and why they should be listening?
Well, you know, as you very well know, Jason, I'm a lifelong collector. Started out growing up in the late 60s and early 70s. Child of the Apollo era, collected everything from autographs to pop culture items, coins, stamps, those type of things, but really caught the space bug being a child of Apollo, and my first memory being of a Saturn V rocket on the TV screen. So in school, wrote a letter to Neil Armstrong, was lucky enough to get a signed autographed photo, spent many afternoons in the library writing astronauts and collecting autographs and writing NASA and getting NASA official publications. But it wasn't until later in my collecting journey that I realized that you could actually acquire things that flew in space much later, actually, once I had a job and had some expendable cash and could buy these things, and started acquiring checklists and maps and personal items that the astronauts took with them in space. And for me, that became just this fascinating touch point in which I felt like I had a connection, a direct connection, not only to the history, but the specific flight itself and some of my astronaut heroes. So I've been collecting for many decades. And when you brought up the idea of this podcast, I thought, what a wonderful way, almost like bellying up to the bar down at the Cape or at some event, to get together with other collectors and just discuss our collections and discuss the hobby. So that's who I am. Been a lifelong collector, and I look forward to engaging with all the other collectors.
You're a heck of a nice guy as well. You didn't mention
thanks.
That.
So I'll well, say you are too. I think that's why we're friends.
So where did this podcast come about? I was sitting on a beach about 6 months ago, bored out of my mind because I'm not a beach person, but did some searching on podcasts. I have a couple interests, Disney, baseball, and space being one of them. I certainly love a lot of the space-related podcasts that are out there that more talk about the industry and some of the luminaries in the space world and launches, things like that. But there was nothing specifically for space. I heard one podcast that was like a 15-minute interview on space memorabilia, and I wanted to gobble up more, and it didn't exist. So here I am texting Rich on the beach saying, dude, we got to start something for the people out there. And this is an emotional outlet for us, but I think it's going to be a lot of fun. Who am I? I was born in November of 79. My earliest memory was this monster of a man, Principal Wallenberger from Stony Lane Elementary School in New Jersey. I walked into my classroom in tears, and I'll never forget it. He was a very scary man, and here he was, literally couldn't put three words together, and he had just told us that the space shuttle Challenger had exploded with a teacher on board. He was distraught. I didn't quite wrap my head around it, went home, talked to my mom about it, and realized I had always had an affinity for the space program. I had grandparents that lived in Florida, so I would go to the Cape every couple years, but that got me started. When I was about 15, 16, I wrote a letter to John Glenn, and he wrote me back. I couldn't believe that. So Rich, not as good as Neil Armstrong, perhaps, but John Glenn, not bad. And then started to get more autographs over time. Started meeting some of the astronauts in about 97, 98. They were starting to do autograph shows, and I was lucky to go to some of those. Started collecting artifacts, little bits and pieces here and there. The first item I owned was a 1-inch section of the Apollo 13 parachute cord that was flown on the mission. And then over time, before I had kids, of course, my collection started to grow into intact artifacts with the help of some mentors I had in the hobby, and started to collect Robbins medallions and checklists and all sorts of unique items. My collection has shrunk over the years because I got a house, a couple of kids now, and that's life. But my passion for the hobby has not waned one bit. And that's sort of where this was born. So let's have some fun, Rich. How about that?
Looking forward to it. Who do we have today for a special guest?
We'll have a lot of special guests over the course of this podcast, but the first one is super, super, super duper special. His name is Steve Zarelli. I'm sure many of the folks out there know him. And if you don't, then this is a wonderful opportunity to get to know him. But Rich, as you know, and as some folks out there might know, he is the foremost autograph authenticator of astronaut and I believe too cosmonaut memorabilia signatures. He does that work for the public as well as a lot of auction houses, and just a wealth of knowledge. We think everybody's gonna enjoy listening to him.
He truly is the gold standard. I mean, there's very few high-end items that I will purchase without either doing his email service or engaging with him for a full authentication. Steve really is truly the gold standard in authentication.
Indeed. Y'all are going to love that chat with him. And every week we're going to have somebody different. And then in a couple episodes, we're going to start to feature collectors. So if you like what you hear and you want to engage with us, we'd love to learn about your collection, the pieces that you have, the special items, why they're meaningful to you. There'll be an opportunity for us to start to talk to collectors. It's not just going to be VIP, so to speak. We want to talk to everybody. So if you collect space memorabilia, we're going to want to hear from you for sure.
One of the things that I've really enjoyed about this hobby over these last couple of decades has been getting access to our heroes, the original Mercury, Gemini, and Apollo astronauts, spending time with them at astronaut scholarship foundation events, acquiring items for their collections, bringing items to them at signings, and learning more about how the item was used in space, or if it was a personal item for them, why they took it with them. We really have been spoiled over these last couple of decades, Jason, by having that direct access and creating really genuine relationships with many of our heroes. And I know you have had many, many opportunities to meet with a number of astronauts, the same as I. And one of the saddest things right now about collecting is that we're losing, and we have lost so many of our dear heroes, and most recently with the passing of General Tom Stafford. And Jason, I think you spent some time at his memorial service. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
I was so honored to be invited. I wasn't expecting it. He and I had built a little bit of a friendship. It started out with fandom, of course, but I did a few favors for him over the years. He certainly helped me with a few things over the years. We'd get together for a meal maybe twice a year, I'd say every 6 months for the last decade or so. Just an amazing guy. And his passing, it did rock me like it did most space fans, because General Stafford was different. You know, four flights, he commanded a bunch of them, and the ASTP mission, fastest man alive, all these monikers. What a hero. What a hero we've lost. And I'm sure most of the folks listening out there would agree. You know, I would like to take 1 second to just encourage everyone. If you've never been to Weatherford, Oklahoma, get there. I understand why you've never been to Weatherford. It's awfully small, but it's quaint. It's beautiful. And it is Tom Stafford heaven. There is I think it was the first 18 years he lived in a home. The site of the home is a park, and the home is not there anymore, but it's a wonderful gazebo with a U.S. flag over it. And to just stand there and read the monuments is fantastic. The guy's got an airport named after him, Rich. I mean, don't forget that. He has an airport there. But then there's the Stafford Air and Space Museum, which is just an absolute, just a gem. I've been there maybe 10 or so times, maybe 10 times in the last 6 or 7 years. And every time I'm there, it seems like they have added probably 5,000 square feet to it. I walk in, I barely recognize the place, and it is just mind-blowing. You know, General Stafford was a space collector himself. The majority of the museum is stuff that he saved or he acquired or reacquired or on loan from NASA. But I spoke with General Stafford about space collecting a lot, and he was aware of artifacts. He was interested in growing the museum's collection. I donated a few pieces over the years that he was very appreciative of. And boy, these ceremonies were amazing. I saw a couple of astronauts there, but to just honor Tom Stafford was so touching. He laid in state in front of a Gemini Titan missile on its side in the back of the museum. And then there was the service, which was open to the public. And Rich, I think I was most choked up by, believe it or not, the very last thing I saw before I drove home. So we leave the church, and everyone in Weatherford, Oklahoma had pulled their cars to the side to let the procession go through. And children and adults in plain street clothes were standing there saluting. And it got to me. I got a little lump in my throat from seeing that. That would have happened whether or not it was for Tom Stafford. The fact is that it rocked Weatherford, Oklahoma, that's for sure. And everyone really took notice of that. So just want to take a minute. If you care to send a donation to the museum, I'm sure they'd greatly appreciate it because they're doing great things. And with the general not around anymore, I bet they could truly use it. I've just sent something off to them myself. And if you can get to Weatherford and tour the museum, you will not be disappointed. Outside of this Air and Space Museum and maybe the Cosmosphere, it is one of the primo destinations for folks who like what we like and collect what we collect. So thanks, Rich, for letting me talk for a minute about that ceremony. It truly was something I'll never forget.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the general means so much to so many people, to the nation, to the world, even given all of his activities, both in NASA, in the military. And I second that notion. If you can give, maybe even more importantly, if you want to support the museum, become a member of the museum on an annual basis and really support their mission, it would be a truly fitting memorial to the general's legacy.
All right, Rich, let's talk a little bit about the RR auction that's coming up. For those that aren't aware, or what am I thinking? Everyone is aware. RR Auction is a fantastic shop based in, I believe, Massachusetts. They are offering some amazing, amazing space memorabilia in the upcoming space sale that is ending on the 25th. And I have a piece that I am going after, Rich. I'm sure you do as well. And then I want to have a little fun with you. I read the catalog cover to cover. I'm sure you did as well, right?
Oh, absolutely. I read every catalog cover to cover when we get them. Even if I'm not bidding on something, I love to read through the descriptions and just learn more about what's available and what's out there.
Same here. I have a huge auction catalog collection. Well, I want to ask you, Rich, if there's a piece in the catalog that I and everyone might have overlooked. Is there something that has a description that's a little understated, maybe an estimate that's too low, maybe some amazing provenance that was not pointed out? So I want to hear what you're bidding on, and then I want to hear, hopefully we're not on the same item, but if we are, we are. To the death, my friend. But I also want to know if there's a piece that I might have passed up in the catalog, didn't think twice about it, but you're like, hey, wait a second, that's a fantastic one, because I have an item, and I want to know if you singled it out. So why don't you go ahead, Rich, you go first.
Yeah, sure. I always go through the auctions, because RR Auction is an online auction. It's a timed auction over a number of days, and chances are the auction will be done by the time this episode appears. It's important to look through every single lot to find out what's available and to see the different type of things that you want. And I specialize mostly in flown numismatic items, so flown Robbins medallions, flown coins, those type of things, flown dollar bills. And for me, what I like to do on any auction is if I don't see anything like that I want to bid on, I tend to go and search on those things that have no bids and the lowest starting bid to try and find those lots that people overlook. And there's one particular lot in this auction that I think for a number of reasons is being overlooked, but that it presents perhaps a rare gem for somebody to pick up, and that is from the Stu Russo collection. There is a flown Iraqi flag from the Apollo Soyuz mission that is on an official NASA certificate, presentation certificate. And it has a certification from Russ's daughter of its flight status. Now, it has no bids on it right now. I think this is one of those unique opportunities to acquire a flown international flag on an important international mission designed to show peace between the two Cold War powers of the United States and the Soviet Union. But more importantly, I think it's being ignored because it's an Iraqi flag. And given all the issues going on in the Middle East right now, I think people are kind of not paying attention to this one. I also think people aren't paying attention to it because it's not directly astronaut certified. It doesn't have the astronaut's signature saying that it flew. However, the piece has a lot of things going for it. It's on an official NASA certificate. The certificate itself is aged appropriately. It's the appropriate certificate. The flag seems aged. The patina is right. You can see the aged glue behind it. And so many other factors on it. There isn't a single bid on it right now. It has a minimum bid of about $200. And you and I both know major flags flown on major historic missions like ASTP are really hard to come by. I think this is one of those sleeper lots that perhaps somebody can pick up at a relatively inexpensive cost.
Well done. Well done, sir. So when I read the catalog for the first time, I originally highlighted about 10 or 12 items that I was like, you know what? I should keep an eye on that. That was one of them, but I eliminated it from my list. And after you're pitching it here, maybe I got to look at it again. I mean, that is a very cool item.
I tell you, if nobody bids on it, as we get towards the end, I might very well sneak in there and do that.
Yeah. I'd love to tell you about a piece that I think is much of the same, perhaps overlooked. But is there anything in the auction that you're going to chase hard? Don't worry. This won't air until it's over.
Yeah, there's some unique National Aeronautic Association certification documents. Now, these aren't flown pieces per se. But these are the official reports and documents, some of them hand-signed by the astronauts. Others are one of only two or three copies that were made by NASA and submitted to the National Aeronautic Association for certification of world record flights. And there's a complete application booklet from Apollo 11. That one is in the multi-thousands of dollars right now. But the Apollo 10 one, I'm actually actively bidding on that one. That one is relatively inexpensive, but a truly historic document. And there are several other NAA documents from Gemini 5. There's an Apollo 8 Frank Borman signed mission report from their submitted documents. So those are the items I'm looking at.
Yeah, those are very cool. No competition from me, but those are fantastic. So oddly enough, Rich, the piece that I'm most interested in is actually kind of silly, doesn't really fit into my collection normally, but I need just a very, very basic, simple, somewhat inexpensive Gus Grissom signature. Sounds silly, but I have a perfect copy of We Seven, the book that they wrote during the program, and I have collected cut signatures of six of the Mercury Seven, of course, Grissom being the last and most desirable, rarest, you know, all those things. There's a cover in this sale, lot 4016, that is kind of an indistinct cover. It's not very nice looking. There's some kind of bizarre markings on it. Bottom line is it's under $500 right now. And it would be a perfect piece for me to complete a Mercury 7 set to be inlaid into what I think is one of the classic books that is of the space program. So I'm going to be chasing that Gus Grissom signature. You know, it even has some handwriting on it that from someone else, not Grissom. It's got kind of a bizarre address, a couple of bizarre postal stamps on it. It's just screaming to be removed from what is an otherwise not so pretty cover. So I'm hoping to get that Grissom signature.
Well, the signature itself, I think that's a really good item to pick up for what you want to use it for. The signature itself is clean and bold. There are no obstructions of the signature. It's in a nice position to where you could either have it clipped or you could have it framed out or placed in a presentation slip in for that book that would look rather attractive. So that's a great looking piece.
Absolutely. Yeah. And hopefully you agree. I mean, normally I would never want to be a part of destroying history, but the cover itself, it's not exactly what I'd call eye appealing. So it's a piece that perhaps I can liberate a perfect Grissom signature from.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, there are times when I think that's acceptable. I don't think the cover itself is very historic, but the signature is. And if you're going to attach it to something that is additive to it and can take it to the next level, like you want to do with a Wii 7, then I think, you know, more power to you.
We'll see. We'll see, my friend. Now I'm going to put my salesman hat on. Okay. There is a piece that I think is going to be a steal. It's going to go for a steal. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe it doesn't, but
more of a steal than the Iraqi flag from ASTP.
Well, time will tell. Maybe now, if we got this episode out in time, I know I could convince somebody how special this piece is, but we might not make it in time. But take a look at lot 4159. So Gunter Wendt, who is everyone's favorite space luminary, right? He was the gentleman that essentially was the last human being to say goodbye to our Apollo and Gemini astronaut heroes, shake their hands. He wore the mission logo on his beta or his jacket, a beta logo from every flight that he saw leave. I've owned a couple of these. I've owned one from Skylab, one from ASTP. Sadly, you know, shame on me. I since parted with them, but Gunter saved those logos off of his launch jackets. And then I believe I know who it was, but there was a space dealer in the late 90s who mounted those betas in between a beautiful block of copy, just describing everything about that patch and how special it was. And Gunter hand signed them, and they present amazingly well. They can be framed beautifully. Heck, Rich, if you look at any photo of the Apollo 11 capsule ingress, the logo on Gunter's jacket, it's here. This is it.
Yeah.
And it's currently at $400. So I don't get it. To me, let's see what that piece goes for, but that is as close to an Apollo 11 patch that you're going to get that actually was carried on the mission. But of course, those would be far out of reach. The crew was offered their patches off their spacesuit. They declined. So when you're looking at those spacesuits in museums, those are the real ones. So how many chances do you have to get an Apollo 11 logo that was that close to the history? And who doesn't love Gunter Wendt? Who doesn't love the fact that it's fully certified? Rich, in my mind, that piece has to go for a couple of grand, and it's currently at $400 as we talk today.
Well, that's a great eye. I think there's so many loan items in this auction catalog, so many premier items, that it's very easy for somebody to overlook a patch like that because it didn't fly. But that doesn't mean it's any less historic, given its association with Gunter, given its association with probably being the last patch that they saw outside the capsule when they shook his hand before the door closed. I think you're absolutely spot on. And I certainly think that this is something that, regardless of what it sells for, will probably come across as a bargain and certainly put the Iraqi flag to shame. So great eye in a great lot to keep an eye on and see.
We need not compete, Rich. I bet both of them are wonderful pieces for anyone's collection. I think the other reason this one speaks to me is because I own a couple of recovery hats. So the actual hats that some of the astronauts wore on the recovery ships. And this is a little bit akin to that. It didn't fly on the mission. It didn't go into space, but I don't think it's possible to get closer to the history than a recovery hat would, or that this patch did, you know? So we'll see what it goes for. Okay. And now we have a very special guest with us. Proud to call this man a friend, Steve Zarelli, who is by far, Rich, tell me if I'm right here, he is arguably the greatest space autograph authenticator in the hobby today, and he has saved me thousands of dollars. Am I right on that, Rich?
You are so right about that. Steve is not only legendary and so important to the hobby, but he is the go-to guy. And when it comes to really high quality autographs, Neil Armstrong, high-end Gus Grissom, you name the autographs, Steve is the go-to guy, not only for us, but for auction houses. And he not only has saved people a ton of money, but his service has made people a ton of money. Just, you know, I've had examples where I've leveraged Steve's service to verify an autograph before I've bid on it, his email service. And it gave me the confidence to press that button and to chase some of the, what I'll say, holy grails are in my collection. So welcome, Steve, and thanks for joining us.
Well, listen, thanks for having me, and boy, are my cheeks red. I can't, you know, you guys are, you're too much. So, but really, thank you for the kind words.
Steve, can you tell us how you got started in this hobby? So I've known you for decades, and I'm not sure I know the answer to this question. So how did it all begin for you?
Well, you know, I was thinking about that myself, and it's like, I think it goes back before the internet, really. So, you know, fast forward or rewind, almost 25, 30 years, right? So I started collecting in the 90s. And, you know, I'd always been a collector my whole life of all kinds of stuff. I started with comic books when I was a kid and baseball cards and that kind of thing. And it was in the, I think, the early 90s, I was just visiting a friend. And he was, you know, really into sports. And he said, hey, Stan Bonson is going to be at the local baseball card shop. You want to head over there and get an autograph? And it was the kind of thing that like never would have even occurred to me. But, you know, we were hanging out on a Saturday. I said, yeah, why not? So we went to this local baseball card shop in Peekskill, New York. And Stan Bonson, former Yankees pitcher, was there. And, you know, he's sitting there and there's maybe 10 people there. It wasn't really crowded. It wasn't one of these real cattle call kind of signings. So long story short is we chatted him up and he's showing us the various grips that he would use on his various pitches. And I got him to sign a ball. And that was, I was hooked after that. Like, you know, that's all it really took. And, you know, I was a big fan of baseball, still am, of baseball and the Yankees in particular. And I lived down in the Metro New York area at the time. So there's a ton of shows you could go to, you know, basically every other weekend at Hofstra or, you know, in New York or in the Meadowlands, they'd have baseball card shows with guests that were signing. So that's kind of how I started. But I always had an interest in, you know, history. I was big into history and that kind of thing, and space. I liked reading about it a lot. And then I suddenly realized, oh my God, you could like get these other autographs too. I can write away, and I can get Ronald Reagan to sign a book, or I can get, you know, George H.W. Bush to sign a photo for me. And, you know, the astronauts were the same thing. I remember the old Autograph Collector magazine, if you recall that. I was really hooked on that. And this is like before the internet, right? This is 94, yeah. 95, whatever it was. And they would put out a monthly magazine. And there was an issue that I think it had like Charles Conrad on the front or something. And I was like, wow, that looks really cool. And I had an interest in space. So I started reading the articles. I'm like, you know, I think astronauts would be a really cool thing to collect. They're great images and it's all, you know, there's a great story behind it. And there's all this patriotic component as well. It's like it pressed all the buttons for me. So, you know, I think I bought, you know, like a Charles Conrad and Richard Gordon signed photos to Odyssey. Then like you, then these guys started coming out with books and doing shows. So it all kind of grew from there.
When did you take the step from being a hobbyist and enthusiast to actually being a master authenticator?
Well, there was no step. I think it was a very kind of a long journey, right? So one of the things that I always liked to do is to write. You know, so like, you know, pre-internet, there was Autograph Collector Magazine. There was Autograph Times Magazine. So I would read these and they inspired me. And I soon found within a couple years that, you know, I was a pretty pretty savvy collector, you know, at the risk of sounding immodest. And I had a pretty good eye for things. So I started just, you know, writing these articles on spec. And I would send it into Autograph Collector, or I would send it into Autograph Times magazine, and I got published, right? So I was, you know, a published author doing studies or, you know, various other topics in these magazines. And then the internet comes along. And, you know, people started with their own blogs. And, you know, this is really before social media with like Facebook. But at the time, you'd set up a blog, you know, your own little page, right? And there was a ton of these kind of things, like guys like Stephen Beck were doing them. And, you know, these guys that really influenced me as a younger collector, you'd go to these websites or these blogs and you'd, you know, read like, you know, really good information from these people. And there was also these listserv groups, you know, the old Yahoo listservs where you would sign up and you'd send a message to the group, you know, Autograph Collecting 101 or whatever it was called. And I met a lot of people that way. You know, guys we all know, like, you know, may he rest in peace, you know, Al Hollandquist. I met him through the old listserv groups and guys like Jerry Montague and you know, various other people. So I started developing some friends in the hobby.
Yeah, and I would imagine that there's no substitute for decades and decades of experience of studying autographs from specific astronauts, how their autographs change, the unique qualities of it, getting used to secretarials and auto pens, and really putting in the years of work studying those patterns and studying what makes a real autograph versus a secretarial or an auto pen.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. So, I mean, I mentioned that it was like kind of a long journey, right? So my journey started with just being a collector and then kind of rising through the ranks of collecting and being recognized as someone who was kind of an astute collector, right? So, yeah. I mean, so now this is the mid-90s, and then I have my blogs and my web pages and I'm published. And I, you know, I think other collectors recognize me as somebody who was had a pretty good eye and was pretty astute. So now fast forward to 2011. I'm, you know, sitting one night and, you know, after dinner, and I got a call from RR Auction, and they said, Steve, you know, Scott Cornish, who did the, you know, the authentication for the space, is retiring. Would you be interested in reviewing our material? So, I mean, this is like 15, 16, 18 years between, you know, before, you know, this happened, this journey. So, you know, 2011, I get a phone call and I debated it kind of for a while, because there's some downside too. I mean, once you kind of turn your hobby into a profession, things change. And quite frankly, authenticators are very often the target of unsavory and malicious people.
Trolls.
You know, through internet trolls. And, I've seen what some of these people have done to Scott and other authenticators. And, you know, it's concerning. Like, it's something you have to consider. But finally, I said, you know what? I'm going to kick myself if I don't give it a try. And I can't let bad people and negative people keep me from trying something that maybe that I want to do. So I said yes to RR Auction. And that was in September of 2011. And, you know, the rest is history. So, I mean, that was my first professional gig, was with them reviewing the material. And it just really kind of snowballed from there.
And did that lead to being contacted by other dealers and auctions and just collectors? Was that truly the foundation that launched you as an independent business?
Yeah, absolutely. So once I became associated with RR, your name starts getting out there. People start seeing you. Other auction houses start calling me. Other dealers start calling me. Collectors start, you know, contacting me saying, hey, I've had this stuff for years. Do you mind taking a look at it? So like I said, it just really snowballed from there. And, you know, now I consult with, you know, many dealers, auction houses, you know, hundreds of collectors from around the world, if not more. And that's it. It just really grew.
I have to ask you a question about Neil Armstrong autographs, because I've been burned in my lifetime. I once had to take a Neil Armstrong autograph out of a frame and rip it in half. And it was one of the worst days of my life. I think it was the only bad Neil Armstrong I ever bought. Thank you for your help with all that over the years. But he's arguably one of the most forged autographs, really, in the world. I was going to say in the hobby, but probably in the world. Do you love to authenticate Neils? Do you hate to authenticate them? Are there any kind of dead giveaways that our listeners can be aware of to protect themselves?
Well, I love it. It never seems to get old. It's a deceptively simple autograph, and most people would look at it and say, "Oh, it's, you know, there's not a whole lot there." And forgers think the same way, and I want them to keep thinking that way, because then that makes my job easier. It's deceptively simple, but there are a lot of nuances and habits that he had that help build the case one way or another, in terms of whether an autograph was signed by him or not. The biggest myth is that, like, his autograph is rare or it's uncommon. No, it's not rare. I mean, he signed literally from 1961, or, you know, since he was an X-1 pilot in the early 60s, all the way through 1994. And, you know, he signed freely through the mail, and he said, "Oh, one per customer," but, you know, people got way more than one signed by him. So his autograph is in very good supply, but it's expensive because the demand is so massive. Is there any magic bullet to authenticating his autograph? And no, there's really not. There's not. But what really helps me is that you have to know how his hand moved when he signed. And very often fakes, you can tell by the way the lines are and the direction the hand is going. No, he didn't sign that. That's not
his hand. I would imagine, Steve, the signature, the fluidity of the signature, and those patterns that you've studied over the years, that's all muscle memory, right? That's not something that, you know, when somebody tries and do a forgery, they're not really using muscle memory. They're trying to copy or mimic, and that's really difficult to do fluidly.
It is. So I have a term for that, right? It's actually called, you look at an autograph and you say, you know what? There's too much thinking in this autograph. Right?
Yeah.
You can tell there's too much thinking going on. It's just a bit too slow. It's just a bit too deliberate. You know, Armstrong, he was so deluged with requests that he would have to fire through them very, very quickly. Right? He's not carefully signing each one. His autograph should be very fluid, should have a ton of speed. No like slowness or waviness or wobbliness. He never reached an advanced age where you get weird, shaky autographs like you see with some of the very, you know, the elderly. His autograph never showed those kind of things due to age. So, you know, you see slowness and wobbliness or hesitation, it's like a never a good sign with an Armstrong autograph.
Are there any forgeries? That's really interesting. Are there other astronauts, perhaps some not as desirable as Neil, that you see forgeries of all the time, but that might surprise people? Like maybe some of the lesser known astronauts, or maybe even just NASA personnel. Do you come across others that are often forged, and then you have that sixth sense where right away you know?
Absolutely. If there's a way to make a cheap buck, someone will do it, even if it's an autograph that's a $5 or $7 autograph. For example, there was some guy on eBay or some seller on eBay that had like nothing but index cards, right? Hundreds and hundreds of just signed index cards. Every single one of them was fake. And these weren't all astronauts. It's like the whole gamut. But this guy literally had like fake John Blahas, right? Like, who the hell is forging John Blaha? Well, somebody is, right? You know, if this guy makes, you know, $7 after eBay fees and PayPal fees, it's probably a lot. But, you know, repeat that 100 times a week for the various other things that you're faking. It adds up. So, you know, are there a lot of people out there faking John Blaha or Bob Cabana? No, but there's probably somebody, at least one, there's probably one person. But, you know, as an authenticator, you kind of have to weigh that in your mind. Like, I have this algorithm in my mind. Like, if I see an Armstrong autograph or a Grissom or an Ed White or a Gagarin, it's a little funny, right? Yeah. It's like you look at it and you'll say, you know, this one's a little off. You kind of do that algorithm. Well, the risk of this autograph and the value of this autograph, there's a lot less leeway for this one. Whereas, like, if I see a Fred Hayes, right, signed a billion autographs, if I see a Fred Hayes that looks a little off, well, the algorithm's going to be different with that one. I'm like, well, Fred probably just, you know, probably went down to the museum and had to sign a couple hundred and he got tired at the end. This is probably okay. High likelihood this one's okay. Whereas a little funky Armstrong or Grissom, you might look at kind of differently.
Yeah, I would imagine it's very much like, and, you know, I think this lends itself to sort of the question on, what are some of the tips on how to protect yourselves, or what are some of the common red flags for collectors, regardless of who the astronaut is? But it's almost like detecting spam in your email box or other things. There's a context, right? Or when you're looking at an eBay posting for an autograph, you're looking at, like the example you gave earlier, is this person just selling nothing but dozens and dozens and dozens of index card signed autographs, to where you're thinking, where the heck did they get all those almost identical cards and pens of those astronauts? So I imagine there are layers to it, and there's a context, as you just pointed out, with each individual autograph. And therein is some of the art that goes into the science, correct?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, as a specialist authenticator, I have a pretty good grip on the habits, like who signed what, when they signed, how hard of a signer were they. So you kind of build this all into your evaluation, right? So yeah, you're right. There's multiple layers that you kind of build in, like what's the value, how common is this, were they an easy signer, when did they stop signing, what kind of items did they sign or not sign. You know, there's so many different layers there to evaluate, but that all goes into the equation. It's not like I just look at the autograph and say, oh, the shape of it looks like the shape should look. Okay, yeah. Thumbs up, it's fine. No, it's a lot more complicated than that.
Yeah, it's that sixth sense.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny. You know, there's the old saying, like, gut sense, right? Or sixth sense. The vast majority of the time, I'll know if something's fake within the first second, right? You just look at it and something is wrong. It's just like that spidey sense gets tingling a little bit. And, you'll immediately think something is off. And that's from looking at many, many thousands and thousands of examples. Suddenly you see one and it's like, just something here is not right. Even if it's the tiniest amount of proportionality or the size or the slant that it was applied, just a tiny bit off. And, you know, most of the time, I know that in the first second. But now, then I'll do the research and I'll kind of go through the exemplars and, you know, one way or another, prove it out one way or another. But there's definitely that element of kind of that gut feeling when you first see something.
Do you sometimes get surprised, Steve, say something you get a gut feeling about at the beginning, either good or bad, and then you let it marinate for a while, you do a little bit more of the research and you start comparing things, and then you're surprised that it turns out to be the opposite? Does that happen often?
Not often, but it happens. Absolutely. Yeah. So I guess you should probably be an authenticator because you know a lot of my tricks. One of my tricks is that if I'm looking at something and I'm like really on the fence, step away. Step away.
Yeah.
set it aside, go back to it tomorrow. And it's amazing how many times you go back to it the next day and you're like, oh, this is definitely bad. Or no, this is okay. It's all right. I can, and then you'll find some exemplars that support it one way or another. You know, I don't want to get too into the weeds, but you know, a lot of times it as an authenticator, especially if you're going through a lot of items, the things you reviewed before can influence the item that you're looking at now.
Yeah. Yeah. You right? know, it's interesting, as collectors, you're the authenticator, but Jason and I, as just pure collectors and not professional authenticators, we kind of do that with each other. I mean, I can't count anymore how many times I've sent something to Jason that I've seen on that unregulated Wild West place called eBay, where I've looked at it and it's like, maybe not. There's just something that doesn't feel right. And I'd send it to Jason.
My answer is always, Rich, why are you contacting me? Call Steve.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Which invariably, if it's a higher end thing, I do. But it helps to have sort of that village of expertise, because I'm not an expert, and sometimes you just need that second guess or triple guess, and then certainly oftentimes you need professional advice.
Well, that's what I'm here for. I mean, you know, confirmation bias is a real thing. You know, I can certainly recall times where I'd be reviewing a collection or a submission through an auction house, and like I'll run across like a couple really good fakes. Like they're definitely yeah. fake, but they're really good. So then like everything after that, you're on DEFCON 1. You're looking for like, you know, fakes everywhere, and like suddenly everything looks like it could be fake. So that's a situation where like, okay, I need to kind of step back, step aside, let the air clear, let my mind clear, and then you go back to it later and do what you need to do. But you know, there's a lot of things that can kind of influence, you know, what you're thinking about an autograph, and certainly the things around it can do that.
I have a two-parter for you.
Mm-hmm.
You often see the same bad piece twice, so I'm sure that must be disappointing, because you bounce an item, and then sure enough, that person elected to sell it, and now here it's back in your hands, and you got to bounce it again. And then who does Steve Zarelli use as a resource when he needs it? So, like, you know, I just made that joke to Rich. Well, go to Steve. Why are you contacting me? Because we know you're there, right? You're the Batman. You have our backs out there. But do you have a confidant that you can go to say, hey, I know my opinion on this. I need your opinion on this, because everybody needs a somebody, right? So there's a two-parter for you.
I review for a number of different places, right? And even some places that may not advertise my services, they'll send me stuff. So I'll reject it from one place, and then a month later, I see it at another place. And then a month later, I see it at another place. It's happened so often, many, many, many times. You know, people don't want to take the L. You know, you know, I can see in some cases, listen, I'm human, right? I'd be a fool or delusional to think that like every decision I've ever made is 100% correct. I think the accuracy rate is very, very high. But yeah, listen, if I rejected somebody and it, you know, was a tweener and maybe like they want to try someone else out, okay, fine, I get it. But like most of the time, this is like junk. It's like no doubt fake. And yet you'll see it going from boom, bing, bing, from place to place. This person's trying to unload it. And they'll always find some place to unload it. You know, there's always a last chance saloon. There's a couple dealers I call the last chance saloons. But yeah, it happens all the time. And so is there somebody that...
Yeah, when it's not a no-brainer, when you need that second opinion, do you have someone to go to?
I do. I mean, listen, like I said, I'm human, right? I'd like to think that my accuracy rate is very, very high, and it is. But, you know, there's tweeners. You'll run into one. It's like, geez, this is either like a really, really good fake, or it's just a little off. It's a little atypical, you know, it happens. So there's a couple people that are some old school collectors and friends that I've known for many, many years. And I'll say, hey, you know, subject line, sanity check. And I won't say what I'm thinking, and I'll kind of bounce it off of them. But yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'm not too proud to admit I'm not perfect. I'm not perfect. And sometimes a second set of eyeballs is a good thing.
Yeah. Awesome answer. Thanks so much. Can you describe just broadly your process for authenticating? So do you use any certain lights and glasses? You put up a pot of coffee. What are the motions you go through to start your authenticating? Because I know you take it very seriously.
Right. So, I mean, you know, there's basically this checklist that you go through. And, you know, the first thing is you take an item in, and the first thing you want to ask yourself is it live ink? Okay. So I have, you know, a handheld, you know, loop, and I have a digital microscope. 99.9% of the time, it's very easy to tell. You know, when I say live ink, I mean it's real ink. It's not a copy. It's not a photo of a signed photo. It's not printed on there like some high-res laser print, which, you know, is a problem. That's, you know, as printing technology gets better and better, preprints, you know, fake facsimile signatures printed onto items gets better and better. So I have tools to make sure that it's actually live ink. Once you've established it's live ink, then the next question you ask yourself is, well, is this an item the person could have signed in their lifetime? Now, for astronauts, that doesn't come into play a whole lot. I mean, most of them were alive in the modern era where there was NASA lithographs and these kind of things. But like if I have a Gus Grissom, that NASA lithograph that's got the worm logo on the back, that's a problem. Right. So, you know, or Ed White. So, you know, that kind of thing. Is this something they could have signed in their lifetime is the next check. And presuming it passes the first couple checks. Well, then the next thing is, well, let's look at the autograph. You know, I mean, assuming it's not some grossly malformed fake that I just don't even need to give it any more thought. But then you do your comparisons, your contrast and compare with known verified exemplars, and you know, then that really your decision is typically made at that point.
Fantastic. Well, given that, then Steve, particularly for those collectors out there that may not be familiar with your service or how to access your service, could you walk through for the collectors sort of the A to Z process of contacting you and sending an item in for authentication?
Sure. So I basically offer two services. There's one which I call my email opinion service. It's basically you can email me a photo of an item or a link to an auction somewhere, and I can issue a cursory opinion as to whether the item is likely to pass authentication or not. That service, it's $12 for a single item. And if you have multiples, then the price per item kind of goes down. So that's my email opinion service. And you can access that through my website, which is spaceloa.com. The second service that I offer is the full letter of authenticity. So the email opinion is just really that. It's an opinion issued via email. It's cursory. It's not meant to be used as a, you know, a full letter of authenticity. A full letter of authenticity is when somebody submits their item to me, I physically examine it, put it through the whole process, and then assuming it passes, I issue a letter of authenticity, which is, you know, the full letter with the hologram and the embossed seal and the signature, and the letter has a picture of the item on it. You know, that service, the cost varies, you know, based upon the value and risk of the autograph. So there's a price chart on my website. And to take advantage of that service, you could just go to my website, spaceloa.com, and download the submission form, and then they fill out the submission form. You mail that to me. It has all the instructions on the form. And, you know, typically my turnaround time, if you send me something, the turnaround time is, I don't know, you know, depending on how busy a time of year it is, you know, around 3 weeks, give or take.
Yeah, I've never waited more than about two, and I'm greatly appreciative of that, because I've also sent items away to some other authentication services, one that I mailed in mid-January and haven't heard a word on. So I appreciate your quick turnaround, Steve. You've always taken that very seriously, and your customers appreciate it.
Well, thanks. I appreciate it. You know, listen, I don't want to be storing items, you know, for months on end. So I try to get to things promptly and, you know, keep the line moving. So, you know, I think that's one of the advantages that I can offer is that, well, first of all, I'm a specialist, and I feel that my opinions are very, very accurate. But, you know, I can respond a little quicker than some of the other services.
Right on.
And I have to shout out for the email service too, once again, because I do think it's for that price point, when you're dealing sometimes with autographs in the $200-$300 range, that $12 doesn't even equate to some of the fees you have to pay to buy the item off an auction site and to pay for it via PayPal. But it is very cheap insurance that gives you peace of mind on when to look for it. And huge shout out on the email service. And then once you get the item, and you really like it, sending it in for that full authentication kind of improves the curb appeal of that item in your collection, so to speak. So you can always get that twofer. But boy, I really love your email service, Steve.
Can't imagine a better way to spend $12. I really can't.
Yeah, well, you know, I always say that very often the best purchase you'll ever make is the one you don't make.
Yeah.
And I always recommend, you know, if you see something coming up for auction and you have the time, use the service before you bid, before you buy the item. It's a lot easier to steer clear of a bad item than have to try to return it after you've already bought it. So, I highly recommend that service if you have the time to take advantage of it, because most of the rave reviews I get are from the people who, not like, hey, thanks, Steve, I bought the item and it's wonderful. It's like, oh my God, thank you so much for saving me from wasting hundreds, if not thousands.
Steve, we so greatly appreciate your time. I think the last question I have for you is, I'm always fascinated by what shows up at your office every day, your desk. Anything cross your plate lately that might be interesting to the folks out there?
Well, you know, I get stuff every day. You know, every day is like kind of like Christmas with opening the boxes, which, you know, I'm forever grateful to my clients and supporters for that. You know, and there's a ton of good stuff. It's hard to kind of single anything out. But, you know, occasionally you run across something and it's kind of a little bit like, wow. And recently what I've run across is that I've basically uncovered a previously unknown Wernher von Braun auto pen pattern. So, it's strange. I haven't seen this thing. It was never published anywhere. Haven't seen it, you know, in decades. And then within the course of a month, I see two of them that match. So it kind of proves that it's an auto pen, and you know, it kind of makes you wonder, well, how many people out there have these unknown, unpublished auto pen, you know, in their collection, because it was just never identified before.
Wow, interesting story. Thanks for sharing that. And what, he's been deceased for so long that two in such a short period of time, you almost wonder, is did someone get a hold of the auto pen machine and crank it up, you know?
Well, the funny thing is, one was on a letter from like 1959 or something. So, you know, without a doubt, the items were of the era. They're not some sort of recent fabrication. Otherwise, I mean, that's always a possibility, right? But because of the nature of the items and where they came from, they certainly were not recent creations. And, you know, here's what's the interesting thing about it too, is that like the late 60s and the 70s auto pens, they're so obvious. Like you could kind of just see that black marker and it chugged along and it was shaky looking, and they look terrible. They really just look so unnatural. But the earlier ones from like the late 50s and the early 60s, Sometimes they used like a metal tip pen, like a fountain pen in there. And some of those fountain pen ones look really natural. They look much, much better than the later iterations. So they have a much more natural look, I think, just because of the nature of the pen and the tip of the pen, how it worked over the paper. But it's fascinating. I mean, over the years, I've discovered Bill Anders' auto pen that was previously unpublished, a Gene Cernan auto pen that was previously unpublished. So this stuff is out there.
And Steve, finding this new version of an auto pen is going to save people from their losing their hard-earned money. I think it's such a wonderful thing. Steve, we could talk to you for hours, but you've probably got 19 Apollo 11 crew sign lithos sitting next to you to green light or red light maybe. But you did share with us some very exciting news for the listeners. So number one, why don't you go ahead and just give all your information again so people know how to contact you, send items to you, and then thank you so much for this special offer.
Yeah, well, listen, thanks for having me. It's great being on, and best of luck to you folks. I look forward to continuing to listen to the podcast. So folks can contact me through my website. And again, that is spaceloa.com. That's Zirelli Space Authentication. And as a special promo for listeners of the podcast, I have a special that I'll offer, and that is it's 15% off the regular price of any submission. And to take advantage of that offer, just go to my website, spaceloa.com. And on the submission form, just right across the top of the submission form, write Two Space Collectors 15. That's it. Just write on there Two Space Collectors 15. And I will deduct 15% off of your order. And that offer is good through the end of May.
Wow. That's very generous, Steve. Thank you.
Sure is. And Rich, I'm getting mine in the mail before you. I have a John Young that I have been waiting a few weeks to send off to Steve. So now I'm going to take advantage of the promo code. Thank you.
I'm staring at some manila envelopes right here with Steve's name on it. I just haven't put the stamps on it.
Well, Steve, thank you so much for joining us. Folks out there, thank you so much for listening. I'm certain you got some value from it. Steve's a wonderful, wonderful guy to talk to and very responsive over email. We are both customers here and you should be too. So, Steve, thank you so much for being with us, my friend.
My pleasure. Good luck.
Wow, what a great conversation. Talking to Steve and learning from him was fascinating. Hope you all enjoyed it. We're definitely going to have him back on the show. And we hope you enjoyed this first inaugural podcast, but we've got a lot more coming. We have a lot of great guests like Steve lined up for our next episodes. Stay tuned, and we'll help you all get something good in the RR auction. And speaking of auctions, don't forget the American Space Museum charity auction coming up on May 4th. You can visit them at americanspacemuseum.org. And if you want to tell us about your collection, what you've purchased at recent auction, or if you have a suggestion for the show, you can reach out to us at tccspodcast@gmail.com. That's tccspodcast@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.
Keep collecting, everyone. Take care.